Hello, everyone. This is Peg Cumbie from Scottsdale, Arizona, and you're listening to Outlander Cast with Mary and Blake.
If you were still close enough to hear me, I did love you. Very much.
All the way from Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander and stars. Welcome. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
Can you hear?
I can. I hear. It was getting a little crinkly, and I think it was Frank's ghost. I think Frank's ghost was just messing with the audio because I'm staring at Blake and I'm like, I'm hearing crickling. I can't hear anything. And now I can. Rest in peace, Frank, but
oh, please, boy. Rest.
Oh, leave us alone.
Oh, goodness. Well, my name is Blake, and I am glad to finally be back on my own show.
I know. That was interesting, huh?
Yes. Yes, it was. That was, it was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah?
A lot of fun watching you guys. I thought you did an exceptional job.
Oh,
I really did. I really did. And, you know, and for those of you who did not watch the Facebook Live of the last episode that Mary did with some of the gals from Outlander cast staff, it was actually quite complicated, as a matter of fact. Mary had to pass around a couple of different microphones. She had to keep six people under control on one podcast.
I was one of those six, yeah.
I know. That's a hard feat for anybody to accomplish. I give you all the credit in the world for doing that.
It was fun.
And it was fun. It was great to hear from everybody too. Everybody had these great different opinions. And I'm sure that most of the listeners were very happy about the fact that they didn't get a chance to hear my nonsense.
No, they want to hear it. And so for those of you who are like, wait a second, we didn't get to hear Blake's, you know, Outlander's Theory of the Week. And we didn't get to don't worry.
Yeah,
now is when you get to have it. This is it. It's going to be Mary and Blake and listener feedback all in one.
Yeah, this episode is going to be a unique one. I think this is the first kind of, the first episode of its kind, really, that we've done, where we're just combining all the elements.
Bring it on.
All the elements.
Speaking of which, what was your GBG, or what was your kilt rating? What did we do first?
Kilt rating. Yes, we do kilt rating. You know, I'm going to give it a 4.7.
Nice.
I enjoyed this episode. There are a couple of things that are in there that I think are questionable.
Okay.
But for the most part, again, all character driven, all for the most part, great emotion, great arguments. It felt real.
Mm.
Even the bits with Jamie and Lord John Grey, it all felt relatively real. But of course, I mean, we all know the what happened with Claire and Frank and how that feels. And
how about your GBG? What was your GBG?
Oh,
give
geez.
It to me quick.
Okay, I would say the good. See, I didn't prepare this because I thought we were moving. I didn't. Okay, the good was, I'm going to say, geez, I don't know. I'm not sure. This is great podcast radio right here.
How about the clarinetist?
No, that's my great. Oh. That's my great. I would say the good was Jamie and that moment when he looked at Lord John Grey and said, I will kill you. Like, that was freaking awesome. Like, that, for some reason, that really resonated with me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot going on with that little sentence that Lord John Grey has no idea why he is like that and why he says that, which is fantastic. The bad, ooh, a couple of bads in here that could
Do
be
tell.
Questioned. But the one real bad that I got, the thumb rub. Oh, really? God, the thumb rub. Oh, goodness gracious.
I mean, bad because it made you uncomfortable?
No, bad because I think it's just a poor choice.
Oh.
I think it's a poor choice.
Oh. But I thought they needed the thumb rub to go there.
Well, I'm not going to say that the action itself is bad, like the action of the affection and everything mm-hmm. from Lord John Grey's bad. No, I don't mind that. It's just, it was so in your face as a viewer. It's kind of like it's bonking you over the head with it. And I didn't like that.
Okay.
The great is the end. The end with the clarinet solo. Fantastic. By the way, stick around for the end of the show. Got a little surprise for you. Just throwing that
Yay!
Out there.
Yay!
But also that final shot of Claire looking out the window and half of her face is covered by the door. And
it was magical.
Great, great, great filmmaking. Not quite a pants off moment, but it was excellent. And I really appreciated that. Mm-hmm. So you already gave your good, bad, great, right? Your GBG. So yeah. We don't need to do that. What you want to get into the particulars of this particular episode?
Yes, I would.
All right, let's do it. The title, of course, was All Debts Paid, with the double meaning, as the episodes of Outlander Season 3 have been so far for mm-hmm. this entire time. It has a meaning for both Frank and Claire, but also Jamie in his situation in the 1700s as well. Of course, Jamie has all of his debts paid. At least Lord John Grey has his debts paid. He keeps Jamie alive. Jamie serves his time for Scotland at Ardsmuir. All the debts are paid on that end. And of course, we have all debts paid for Frank and Claire. Frank has done what he said he was going to do. He was going to raise Brianna.
Together.
And they were going to do it together. They both have paid that debt.
She is raised. She is an adult now.
Yes, she is. They can both move on. The writer was Matt B. Roberts, Yay! Who was one of the main producers of the show. And, you know, I got to give Matt credit. He's had some yeoman's work. I've said this before. He's had some yeoman's work on Outlander. He's done The Gathering, The Reckoning, The Search, Best Laid Schemes. Jay Sweet Pret, which is pretty good. And he's also done Dragonfly and Amber, which mm-hmm. I do go back and forth on that episode and The Garrison Commander being my favorite episodes of Outlander. And so now these past two, Dragonfly and Amber, and now this, All Debts Paid, have been pretty phenomenal. So I give him credit. Directed by Brendan Mayer again, the guy who directed the season 3 premiere, The Battle Joined. Mm-hmm. And you could tell the direction in this episode was excellent.
I would agree.
And it's also teamed up with the director of photography, Alistair Walker, who also did The Battle Joined. And again, you could tell. I love Steve McNutt. I love me some Steve McNutt. But what these two, Brendan Mayer and Alistair Walker, have achieved together, because, you know, directors and directors of photography, they work hand in hand.
Yes.
What they've achieved together has been probably the best looking episodes of Outlander since Anna Forster.
They're quite the combination, I would agree.
Since Anna Forster did her job in The Wedding and Wentworth Prison and To Ransom a Man's Soul, and also, what was the, goodness gracious, the season 1A finale. Oh, Both Sides Now. All of those episodes were phenomenal. And I think these two have been the best since then. But it's now time for all the listener feedback, my darling.
Woo-hoo!
Are you ready to get into
it? You don't want to delve into the episode at all? Well, I mean,
no, we're gonna talk about
it. Okay, while we hear this is going to be really interesting. You're right. Totally unique experience.
Right.
Yay. Before we begin, we wanted to let you know that episode 93 of Outlander Cast is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. It's a place of discovering the best makeup and skincare products while uncovering your confidence as a woman. That's MinuteWithMary.com. That's me, guys. That's me.
All right, on the website, we got a comment from Last12C, and they say, well, I realize this will come as a shock to many, but as a long-time book reader, I would have to say that I feel that the show's interpretation of Frank and his marriage to Claire is far superior to those of the of a multitude of readers. The concept of Claire suggesting a discreet open marriage is much kinder to Claire than how things played out in the books. And by the fifth reread or so, I didn't much care for book Claire. I found her to be hypocritical, bipolar,
bipolar.
That's them's fighting words.
This next word's a fighting word. Look at this. Emotionally constipated. Can I please use that phrase?
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
Wow, that is emotional.
That reminds me of like how Felicity must feel since she can't speak yet, and she's just like, I need to ask her, are you emotionally constipated? You've just got so much going on right now that you don't know what to say. Emotionally constipated.
Oh my God.
Get yourself some Miralax.
Oh my God, I'm hot.
Oh my God, continue. Her to be hypocritical, bipolar, and emotionally constipated.
But I love and totally empathize with TV Claire. I have truly enjoyed seeing Frank finally get a voice and the opportunity for people to say what he went through for 20 years. Frank was never a threat to Jamie and Claire's relationship. He was simply a tragic man who was denied his one true love by a fantastical happenstance through no fault of his own. He loved and cared for a child who was not his own, and he was a good father to that child while her mother was absent. He was entitled to every moment of pain, frustration, and anger that the writers gave him, and I feel the show portrayed him in a very fair and balanced manner. My darling, last 12C, we're like, you're my spirit animal here, but as a reader, my love, how do you feel about this?
I don't know how I feel about this.
I do not know how I feel about this.
I will say...
No, okay.
Go ahead.
I found Frank and Claire to be more on an even playing field through the show.
Okay.
I found my heart to be pulled for both of them as a child of divorce that took a long time to be divorced and having to grow up in literally my parents got divorced when I became an adult too. And they did it for me. You know, I watched this and I was like, I get it. They want her to have this like family and they're going to sleep in different beds. And the fact that Claire was the one that brought up the open marriage is something that's different.
Mm-hmm.
But Claire's a modern woman and I don't know. Like a lot of people are like, that's terrible. But really? There's some that I agree with this. I'll let you go because you said she's your spirit animal.
I have to say, show Frank, again, hasn't really done much at all to earn Claire's ire. I think there's an argument to be made that he didn't let her grieve enough over Jamie. And how could you ever expect Claire to just go back into being in a relationship willy-nilly? So I understand that argument and I appreciate it. I think there's validity to it. Mm-hmm. However, Frank in the show still, again, really hasn't... He's supported Claire. He's done what he's needed to do. And, I don't really... Again, commandment number three, the books in the show are different. So we have to accept that. And within the context of the show, the agreement that both Claire and Frank have made makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense. It makes sense because Frank deserves someone who will love him the way that he wants to be loved. Now, I agree. Sandy Candy probably ain't the best deal here. Okay? Getting her online doctorate degree. but Claire also deserves and has earned the right to live her life independent of a man that she no longer feels love for. So why would she keep pushing that? It makes sense for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like this idea, at least that's the way that it's been presented to me from the readers that
from
Frank...
From some readers.
From some readers, okay. Obviously not Last 12C. Thank you very much, Last 12C. But from some readers that have said, well, Frank's an evil guy. He cheated on, even though it's not specifically said in the book, it's alluded to. Even you guys talked about it on the last episode. yes, it may be alluded to, but I think this is a better choice because at least the two of them have made a choice. They've made, and when you make choices, there's your drama, right? Mm-hmm. When you have when you have an obstacle and you have two ways to go around it, and they both made a choice for each other, therein lies the drama for both of them. And I think it's a more evenly played field, as you said, my darling. And that's why I think I agree with it. I'm happy that they have made this apparent change from the book. On Facebook, Joanna Felci says, "My heart did go out to Frank.
Heart will go on.
When he said he deserved to have a wife that loved him." Yes.
We all do.
I know, I agree.
Where's my sister wife? Just kidding. Karen Henry says, and he was right about that. I don't know what that means. Claire got the best of their bargain. She could never be in love with Frank again after Jamie, but he stayed in love with her for years before they finally died of neglect. Don't
I'm Ron Burgundy?
You know, Blake, if you're going to put in these Facebook comments, you could at least try to edit them so I can read them.
Sometimes I just leave them messed up so I can play
you
the sound.
You read Karen Henry then. Read Karen Henry.
You just read that one.
Well,
so Rebecca Rodriguez. Sorry, this episode's a little out of sorts here because this is so new territory for us. We're combining all the elements of the show. Rebecca Rodriguez says, "Jamie walked behind a horse in irons for 3 days? That's just cruel, man."
Okay, so was it Jamie that said that?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I'm forgetting. But part of me I have to rewatch who says the 3 days part.
Yeah.
Because part of me wants to be like, did they just exaggerate? Was it really just kind of like 5 hours? Like, oh my God.
It was like 3 days.
I've been walking behind you for like 3 days, bro.
It reminds me of you and Up. My arm hurts. My elbow hurts.
It is just cruel for 3 days. I think someone was being dramatic. Just kidding, but seriously.
Sabrina Ellis says, and boom, just like that, Outlander is back.
Despite guess who's back?
All the times people have
back
tried
again.
To justify the stop.
Jamie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? Guess who's back? Guess who's back?
You done?
Yep.
It really feels like it's back with episode 303. Jamie's still crying. Claire's still pinning, and yet it feels like the heart is back.
Outland is back. All right.
I'll be interested to hear from the others who, like me, felt that the first two episodes were just missing something they couldn't place.
Her good was the end of Frank. I'm not a book Frank fan, but I don't dislike him either. They always struck me more as friends with benefits.
Hi-yo.
Show Frank, though, was honestly just selfish. His poor me martyr business was really just so he could keep Bree. And him bringing his PhD skanks to the house was just plain old wrong. At least in the books, he really did try to hide them. Bye, Felicia. Nice. Bad was the Lord John Grey and Jamie relationship. They spent too much time on the trivial things and blindsided us with his feelings for Jamie. They skipped the development and subbed him in talking about his special friend who died at Culloden. And the great, one word, Murta. He's alive! Alive! I thought all along that this show would keep him around, though I kind of wish he reappeared later in the story. I'm not mad at them, though. It's Murtal, y'all. The episode gets 5 bricks from me since kilts and plaids are outlawed.
I will say, again, another change from the book, apparently. Murtal is alive. In the book, I guess he dies in Culloden. Mm-hmm. Here, he's alive. And not only that, he's going to the American colonies as an indentured servant.
Alexander Hamilton.
So
maybe he'll meet Alexander Hamilton.
I really love this, and I'll tell you why. Because now, obviously, you know, I'm just gonna play the bell.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
I was right. They are definitely going to the American colonies now. That is a guarantee. Guarantee they're going to the colonies. Whether it's by the end of this season or the beginning of next season, I'm not 100% sure yet. The nerds down the hall are still working on that one.
Meaning you?
But they are definitely going to the colonies. And I'm happy that Murta is going to be in the colonies because once you go to the colonies, there's almost no going back to Scotland, because the story has to shift in such a major way. And you need something from the previous seasons other than Jamie and Claire to anchor yourself. And Murtaugh is the perfect choice for that. The absolute right choice. Everybody loves him. Nobody yep. wanted to see him to die. A little bit of a fake out there with him being sick. I thought he was going to die this episode.
Okay.
But I'm glad he didn't. And, oh, by the way.
What?
Bam!
Just like that.
A winner!
I was right. Murtaugh was alive, and we saw him at prison. I was right. I was right. Ring that bell.
Ring, ring, ring. A winner.
Laura Hager says, Blake, now do you understand why we don't like Frank? No. No, 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 no. I don't. I really don't. If you just said, hey, now that you knew that in the book he did X, Y, and Z, do you now understand why we hate Frank? I still don't, but I can appreciate why you do. In the show, I'm lost. I'm lost for words. If you can still hate Frank as just a show, Frank.
Okay.
I don't get it. Can you, and I'm not trying to be mean here. I just don't get it. Can you at least explain to me why someone would be able to hate Frank, just the show version?
I don't. So I don't know.
Right, but you've had conversations with other people, right? Like,
yeah, but seriously, like I saw these past couple episodes and I'm like, that was my life. Like my parents slept in separate beds. They stayed together to raise me. Mm-hmm. And then as soon, I really highly doubt that they had affairs, but I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But like they stayed together mm-hmm. because that's what people did. And then they broke up as soon as I was an adult. So I watched this and I'm like, if anything, they were selfless for Brie. Mm-hmm. Yes, both of them wanted this child and they wanted to, they tried. I don't hate Frank. So I can't tell you, I do not hate Frank, show Frank. I don't hate him.
I mean, he's got a couple of bad looks in here. I'll give you that, Laura. He's got a couple of bad looks. Number one, Sandy Candy showing up at the potty.
Like, not classy.
Not a good move. Not a good look there, Frank.
No.
That's, you know, that's a major.
Right.
Like that. That is bad news. And I can understand being very angry at Frank for that. I can also make a case that you could be angry at Frank for wanting to take Brie mm-hmm. to England and telling Claire that she just sucks as a mom and that's the reason why. I mean, ultimately, that's what it came down to, right? Mm-hmm. It came down to him saying, sorry, Claire, you've never been around because you've been off becoming a doctor and I'm the man. You suck. I'm taking Brie. I can make a case for that. The counter argument to that case is Brie is an adult.
Correct.
She can choose, now that she's 18 or whatever the hell age she is, she can choose to go wherever she wants. Mm-hmm. And if she chooses to go with Frank in England and go be with him in Oxford or Cambridge, wherever he was going to go, great. Let her do that. Mm-hmm. That's not on Frank for that. That's on Frank for making that decision. If Brie was like 13 and he made that decision, mm-hmm. yep, okay. All right, I got it. I can make that. That is not a good look either. That's actually a hateable offense. But that's my opinion.
But you're right. It waited until she was an adult, so it's a little different. Lisa Kolperkis says, yes, the chess scene was awesome. Loved Jamie's response. Very quiet and deadly. Mm. You didn't need a flashback on Blackjack's scene. You knew exactly what he was thinking. I'm not sure about John's tear at the end. I think he was still thinking about Hector, aka the friend of Kalada. Not sure I liked that, but my guess is that he would be frozen with horror that he forgot himself so much. But overall, a great scene.
Great scene. I think he's definitely remembering his special friend, and I guess his name is Hector.
I think they had a lot of wine.
I think they...
Listen, in.
They were getting Sassenach wasted.
They were getting Sassenach wasted playing chess, which can take a long time.
Yes,
so they probably had a lot of Sassenach wasted moments. Mm-hmm. Talking about their love. He finally can talk about this kind of with someone. Kind
right.
of.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Like, Culloden has still happened pretty dang... Well,
yeah, it's what, six...
Well,
no, a little bit more years. Than that.
You're right. You know, your love is your love. And for Lord John Grey... He doesn't get to have a law of love.
Mm-mm.
Because that isn't the thing that is allowed in Scotland or in Britain.
Or pretty much anywhere.
Right.
Really. I mean, let's be honest.
Right.
At this time.
So here was literally his special friend, his love. And he finally feels like he can kind of talk about it because of the wine and because Jamie opened up.
Yeah. And I think he's hurt by the fact that he made a leap like the way that he did. And he was just told, I will kill you. Like, not like, oh, I'll kill you, but like, I will kill you.
Yeah.
Like that, you make that leap with somebody and you put yourself out there like that. And yes, that's an emotional thing. And when mm-hmm. you get rebuffed and you start putting that on top of the fact that your lover of time gone by is dead at Culloden, and you know Red Jamie was one of the commanders at Culloden, and you start throwing all this into one giant boiling pot.
All the emotions.
You know, I get the tear. I like it. The one easy second guess that I talked about, that I mentioned earlier, one of them is the thumb rub. Because, let me say this, the show so far in the first three episodes, and I've said this many times, is that it has been subtle filmmaking.
You are a thumb rubber.
Let me finish. It's subtle filmmaking. And what they have done is they've made it a real point to engage the audience.
Mm-hmm.
A perfect example was the end of not this episode, but the previous episode. When, you know, you see Frank and Claire, you know, and they're there and then beds and all of a sudden it switches shots and boom, mm-hmm. two separate beds. Subtle filmmaking, pants off moment.
Yes.
This, and they even started that again with Jamie. Touches the hand
mm-hmm.
and Jamie looks at him and says, I will kill you. And it was Lisa who said, you didn't need a flashback. You didn't need any of that stuff, which makes sense because... That's there for you. That's there for the viewer. Mm-hmm. You're there to remember what happened to him. And it's so ingrained in your brain that, okay, I get what Jamie's coming at now.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have the thumb rub.
Yep.
I don't mind. Actually, I applaud the fact that Lord John Grey did what he did. Grabbed his hand, tried to show some affection. But when they have the thumb rub, it's like... It's they're banging you over the head with the fact that...
I disagree.
Oh, well, I they're banging you over the head with the fact that Lord John Grey is gay and has this feeling for Jamie that has somehow kind of came out of nowhere, at least within the context of the television show.
It came out of a lot somewhere. They just couldn't fit it all.
That's what I'm saying. So you can only go by what the show shows you, right? So that affection was like, whoa, like... At no point did Jamie ever give any inclination that he was all about that life.
Mm-hmm.
And if he would be, great. If he isn't, that's also okay too. But what I really wanted was for Lord John Grey to just touch Jamie's hand. And then Jamie kind of overreact a little bit. Like and leave it to you, the viewer, to decide whether or not it was Lord John Grey just showing affection. Being like, okay, I understand. Like, you know, like if a guy grabs another guy's hand, that's not like overtly homosexual like tone. That's just like, hey man, I got you. I understand. But I also think the thumb rub is a very intense emotion being shown to the viewer. And it's just plowing.
You need to find out that thumb rub was in the script.
Yeah, and I guess my whole point is this. I wanted the viewer to be able to make the decision for themselves to think...
Because I don't think it was the thumb rub. I think it was his look, his eyes that did it. I think the thumb rub, I know when I'm holding someone's hand or if someone's crying, I'm rubbing their back. I'm like, I'm moving my hands. But it was his look where he like did the little thumb rub. And then the eyes were like, hey. You down?
Yeah. Like, you ready for this?
y'all ready for this? I'd say it was the eyes and not the thumb rub.
Can we at least then say, because I see where you're coming from, I think it's probably a mixture of both. And it's just the way that it went down. I just felt like it was just hammering you, and I wanted the viewer to make that choice for themselves, and I wanted Jamie to interpret it the way that he did, mm-hmm. but not so over your head. Like, okay. You know what I mean? That's my one easy second guess. And another second guess that can come out of this too for me is the amount of time that they had spent together, mm-hmm. It wasn't entirely clear, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with you having to engage with the material and engage with what you're watching. You know, you really have to pay attention to the lapses in time. But it just felt like, okay, we're taking a 10 pounds of crap and we're put into a 5-pound bag here. So we got to get to all of this stuff. So let's give you the highlight moments of what happened in this book. And it kind of reminds me, of Black Mass. Remember Black Mass, the movie about Whitey Bulger with Johnny Depp?
Did I see that movie?
Yeah, we saw it together over at the drive-thru theater.
I was probably
drive-in
asleep.
Theater.
Okay.
Well, it, you know, coming from that area, I know a lot about Whitey Bulger. It's just when you're in from the Boston area, like Whitey Bulger is like the boogeyman. Like if you're bad, Whitey's going to come get you.
Watch out, your back.
And when they did the movie, it was just kind of like it was a movie, and it was just like the greatest hits of what Whitey did. Mm-hmm. And I think for someone who watches that film, it's okay. It just didn't really have a through line. And that's the way that I felt about this relationship between Jamie and Lord John. It just felt like greatest hits.
Okay.
And I think they tried too hard to put too much in too quickly.
Well, you know, you're just going to see how much story they have left to say. So I don't fault them.
Oh, no, I don't fault them either, because I feel like there's one thing that this show is doing so far. The pace is through the roof. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are chomping up screen time here.
Yes.
And it's probably hard to blame them because of the nature of the book. Again, I don't know the size of the book, but given what's already happened.
Yes, you do. You've seen it.
Well, no, but like, I don't know what's happening within it. Mm-hmm. You know, Game of Thrones is an enormous book, but when George R.R. Martin spends five pages talking about a cup, you know, that's, you know, you can't get from this just the size, mm-hmm. but from what is happening within the show so far, I mean, we are jumping and hopping and skipping and we're all over the place.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that there's a lot more to get to.
Yes, there is. Including Jenny Wells on Facebook said, personally, I thought Claire's goodbye to Frank fell a little flat. If I were to write it, I would have had Claire say something like, I'm so sorry. Marriages are messy and they'd had that big fight.
I totally agree with this. I kind of want Claire to be a little bit more remorseful about saying the things that she did and how Frank had a role in this too. Frank had a huge role in how their relationship fell apart. Mm-hmm. Even though he tried, he did agree to go and be with other people. Mm-hmm. Even though it was brought up by Claire, Frank could have said, nope, not doing it. Sorry.
Yeah.
We're in this marriage together, and that's that. It, as Janet said last episode, it takes two to tango here. And they are both at fault. And I want Claire... I mean, I think implicit in what she said, as we played in the beginning of this episode, implicit in what she said is, I love you. I really did. I think implicit in that is that she is sorry. But would it be fair to expect an apology from Claire, do you think?
Wait, what do you think she's sorry for?
For how their relationship wound up and how things transpired and how they both treated each other at the end.
I don't know. I don't know if I need it. I'm sorry. I feel like they tried really hard.
Yes. I agree. But I mean, like...
Like, if it could be one of those, like, kind of fake I'm sorry, it's like, I'm sorry your feelings were hurt. It's not the really, like, I'm sorry I loved another man. Because she's not sorry she loved another man.
No.
I'm sorry I came back pregnant. She's not sorry she came back pregnant, okay? But I'm sorry your feelings are hurt, Frank. Maybe one of those.
No, I don't want her to be sorry because she loved Jamie. That's not fair.
Yeah, so and what do you
I, and
want
I don't
her
want
to
her to be
for?
Sorry that she had a baby with Jamie. That's also not fair.
Yeah.
What I want her to be... I think I want her to say she's sorry about is just how things eventually transpired between the two, how the things soured between the two, outside of Jamie, outside of Bree being Jamie's daughter, just how they both treated each other. I mean, throwing ashtrays, bringing Sandy candy.
Yeah, that she can apologize
like
for.
That's
she
what I'm getting
say,
at.
I'm sorry I threw stuff at you.
Right. You know, like, I'm...
Should have thrown tissues.
Tissues are the way to go.
On Instagram, CWNEK says, I'm not sure I'm really loving these pre-reunion episodes. They seem to be very rushed. My husband has noticed this as well. And even though he's not read any of the books, as much as we want to see Jamie and Claire be back together, I want the whole story to play out.
Mm.
Lore Tomar 22 on Instagram said, I definitely love this episode and seeing Murtaugh again is priceless. However, I was expecting to see more of the long years for Jamie and Claire, such as Brianna's accident, the Tartan incident, and Jamie looking for his white witch, etc.
I don't know what any of that stuff is.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
But I feel like they probably did. Again, they gave you the highlights
you know nothing, Jon Snow.
There it is.
They gave you the highlights of their lives. Mm-hmm. And from what I am told, a lot of the story was spent on Jamie in prison.
Yes.
And they didn't have a whole ton of Claire and Frank together. And I love the fact that we were able to see what happened between Claire and Frank, to see how it devolved. And making this relationship something that you can have regret over and feel so... I mean, look at all these comments. Mission accomplished here, right? I mean, people feel about Claire and Frank. They've made that relationship worth our time. And how that devolved is also worth our time. Because it gives you so much light and insight to what the relationship is with between Claire and Bree. Because if you recall, the relationship between the two at the beginning of Dragonfly and Amber is not good.
It's not good at all.
Not good at all. And that gives you a little bit of a reason on why. It gives you more background. It gives you more of a background on when Claire says, oh yeah, Frank passed away. Like, she has that kind of regretful look on her face. There you go. And that is important. We need to see that stuff.
Fraser Ridge, 1776, says, I loved this episode. When I heard that unique voice, I almost fainted. And I followed the camera along the dark cell, and it finally aimed at Murtaugh. And I was so excited. For a while, I thought I had imagined his voice. I hope we get to see him with Jamie in Edinburgh.
Well, we're not going to see them in Edinburgh, but we are probably, and again, my outlandish theory of the week is that we're going to see them in the colonies. That's a guarantee.
Tia K5 says, definitely five kilts. The good was seeing Murtaugh alive, and the way you heard his voice first made me gasp, and I cried when he and Jamie were separated. The bad was Frank's mistress coming to the door during Claire's graduation party. I thought that was a bit overdone. And the great was Jamie's depth of expression when Lord John Grey touched his hand. You could see surprise, realization, horror, terror, and lethality cross his face in just 1 second. Brilliant acting by Sam. Runner-up, great, was Frank's death. I was bawling. Buxtehood 11 says, I didn't imagine that the Claire and Frank storyline would have had such an effect on me. It was utterly heartbreaking. It was so raw and filled with pain. Tobias and Katrina simply knocked it out of the park.
See, making people feel.
Yep, all the feels.
That is... They have done this in spades for this season. Claire R64 says, great episode, but can't help but feel that the prison scenes weren't harsh enough. Jamie is permanently scarred by his time in Ardsmuir, and the book is great at showing exactly how much he suffered there. I think it just might become important later on when he meets Ardsmuir Lot in the U.S. Oh, there you go. Okay. And understand why they are so important to one another. Yeah, it.
Spoiler, Claire R64.
I will say this. I think Jamie kind of got Goodfellas treatment. He kind of got the Ian treatment a little bit, being like, "Hey, oh, sorry, can't hang out with the kids," like how we were talking about with Ian. Mm-hmm. Jamie was eating pheasant and he's having these dinners.
It doesn't
seem like, obviously it's prison, so let's be honest, that's shitty no matter what.
Yeah,
but you know, I mean, he's kind of being taken care of here by Lord John Grey and the previous governor or whatever the heck it is of Ardsmere. Like, he's having dinners, he's talking, he's hanging out with these guys. It just doesn't seem like he went through a really harsh time. To me, at least. It just seems like he was there and then he said he didn't want cats and then he ate pheasant.
I mean, yeah, the show was a little quick.
A little quick.
On Twitter, Cheryl Pearl gave it 4.3 kilts. The good was a change to an open marriage instead of cheating. The bad was Ardsmere development felt like weeks instead of years, just like we were talking about, Blake. And the great was Murtaugh Lives. Jay McFadden said, all right, here it is. 4.99 kilts. The good was filthy prison Jamie.
She puts a little fire emoji.
Yeah, the bad was Lord John Grey looked like he was in Interview with a Vampire. I would agree. And the great was the writing was amazing. Cher Zerokman said, top number one rewrite, Murtaugh. Top number two rewrite, Jamie walking up on Grey when he was taking a piss instead of a dump.
Oh, man. Was that? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's.
I'm glad to. Cat. Penn Ocean said, weird how changes in fashion made Frank less attractive in the 60s than he was in the 40s. Do you mean that mustard colored turtleneck did not turn you on?
Not so much.
I love his glasses. All right, we got some emails.
Renee from Japan says, good, yay, Murtaugh. This is a wonderful deviant from the book. Bad, the slowest rat in the world in the major's office. Why didn't anyone kill it? And the great was the wonderful acting of the tragic trio. Sam Heughan after Grey wouldn't kill him. Mm-hmm. Claire with the tear-filled eyes that refused to cry during the argument about Sandy and Frank's him. Anyone else think it's ironic that Jamie looked clean-shaven through the hideously dirty in prison all the time, even though at Lallybroch his beard was out of control?
Seriously.
That was not the deal in the books. He shaved occasionally. Still, glad the beard was gone. Also, I loved the touch of highlighting Claire's rings, first showing Jamie's silver ring when she says, let's drop the pretense, during the divorce argument, and later when she is hugging the husband of the patient. Frank's golden ring can be seen just before Joe comes with news of Frank's death. And my first ever kilt rating is 4.4 kilts for the somewhat bumpy passage through the first through time in the first half. Well, this is for you, Renee. Thank you very much for
your first time.
Thank you so much.
Katie in Kentucky. Ooh, you all right?
Yeah, sorry. I just hit the mic.
Katie in Kentucky wrote in.
Felt like a baby with my arms.
reflex. I'm piping on the third episode of Outlander, and what an intense ride this season is turning out to be. What changes they are making, I understand, and I'm loving it regardless. The character of Frank is very well done here. They have fleshed him out to be more of a well-rounded character, with his own issues, of course.
Thank you.
And haven't shielded away from not demonizing him.
Shied.
Oops. I love his character because in the book you only see Frank the way Claire herself sees him, and so your opinion of him is only based on what Claire tells you. But here in this episode, Claire is shown not living up to her own promises, and so Frank doesn't feel like he can trust her. He wants to be involved with his daughter because even if it's his own love for Claire that has dwindled, Bree still has and will always have his devotion. He stays for Bree's sake. Now that's a good father, good husband. Well, I think the show does a good job of painting everyone in a realistic light. No one is truly a terrible person or a good person. They are just people having to deal with tough and unforgiving situations. And Jamie and his dynamic and his sister is always so enjoyable to watch as it plays out. They would die for one another in this episode, and no one does except Frank. They do end up sacrificing a lot in order to save the other. Oh, that was from the other episode. I'll never forgive you, Jamie Fraser. Broke my heart in two. Overall, the season is amazing.
Here is another second guess that I have of this show.
Is this an interesting moment? Do I need to, like, look away?
No, I don't think so. the second guess that I have is that Frank dies at the end. And that's just, it's
what
so,
do you mean?
Frank dies and he dies in a car accident. It's just random. Like, oh, he dies in a car accident. Now, I did hear Ashley say in the previous episode, that's life. Life happens like that. And yes, I agree. Life does happen
yes.
like that. But reality is not an excuse for story.
What?
Okay. Just because things happen in the world randomly and whatever doesn't mean that you have to adhere to that. For story, in my eyes, when it comes to television or movies, there has to be there has to be you are creating this story.
Okay.
And you have every right to do whatever your heart desires in this world. And all of a sudden, you just have somebody die, just like that.
People do.
Okay, I agree. People do. But what this show, and I think...
People disappear.
What all the time. What Outlander, I think in the books, now that I'm reading the first book, and in the show, Outlander has made it a purpose to make things very clean for Claire, meaning... She is in Scotland. Uh-huh. She goes back in time. And in order to survive, she has to marry Jamie. It's out of her hands.
Okay.
Nothing is her choice. So when she has to consummate her marriage with Jamie,
mm-hmm.
we can't be mad at her because she's being forced to get married. Mm-hmm. And yes, she has to consummate this marriage. Otherwise, she can go back to Blackjack Randall and that's that. It's out of her hands.
Yes.
The same thing with this, in my opinion. And like, you can't be mad at Claire for getting married and for cheating on her husband. You just can't, because the story demands that you can't get mad at her. And the same thing happens here. I feel like they needed Frank to go away. And you can't get mad at Claire for wanting to go back to Scotland if Frank's dead. You can't get mad at Claire for moving on with her life if Frank's dead.
Agree.
And you just need him to go away so that the rest of the story can go on. My opinion is I wish he didn't die. Or if he died, have it be like kind of a question of whether or not he committed suicide. Because that, again, is a choice that Claire would have to make when she's arguing with Frank about their lives and yada yada. Maybe the choice that she makes sends him off to do something bad.
I think it was like Home Alone. I wish my family would disappear.
And then all of a sudden, he does.
No.
but more importantly...
I don't want Frank to commit suicide.
Neither do I. And my other point would be then, if Claire just said, Frank, leave. Get out. I don't want to see you again. Because again, that is a choice and Claire would have to live with that choice. And there is no choice. There's nothing there for her other than Frank got his keys, got in the car, drove away, and all of a sudden just died.
Well, here's my question.
It's neat. It's too clean. It's too clean of a break for me. There's no choice there. Mm. It is what it is. And now Claire is free and clear to do whatever the hell she feels like. And I don't like that. I don't like that.
Well, you might want to read Meredith's insight.
This is from Meredith in Washington. She says, I do wonder if Frank's death was actually a last-minute suicide. Yes, okay, there you go. It could simply be that he was driving erratically after the fight, but I do wonder if you were meant to think maybe... possibility. Possibility.
I'd say no, because he wants to start his life anew with Bree.
Right. And he was intent on moving with Sandy Candy to England and then being with
Bree. She's so smart, that Sandy Candy.
And then she also says, Lord John also has a big problem. He's a gay man who's fallen in love with a straight man. That in itself must be painful. But in a way, he's now in the same situation that Frank faced when Claire came back. He reminds Jamie of Blackjack Randall. Oh, that's a good one. That is a good one. I mean, here's Frank, who has the same last name, has his face, and Claire can't help but cringe at first. Now here's John, who isn't a villain in any way, who was kind, fair-minded, and generous. But he also happens to be Jamie's red-coated jailer who desires him.
Yeah. You didn't pick up on this?
I did, but...
Jamie's literally going to think that every red coat wants
to bang
just
him. Wants to...
He's going to be like, he's British.
But he wasn't trying to coerce Jamie into an unwanted affair. He was simply letting Jamie know how he felt, which is rather brave.
I agree.
And the problem is that John isn't a villain, but Jamie is now going to think of Black Jack Randall while stuck in prison because of Gray simply being what he is. John, of course, has no idea that Jamie went through before. There was no scenario where this was going to work out, and even if you took Black Jack out of the equation, Jamie grew up in the 1700s where just being a homosexual is considered a criminal act, and he's Catholic, which condemns them even more. People of that era were not brought up with the idea of homosexuality as loving, where it wasn't a predatory act. The idea of a homosexual falling in love with is somewhat ridiculous to them. So Jamie can't give John the benefit of the doubt that John was getting his signals crossed and was looking for a loving relationship. And you can believe that he did. There is more intimacy in their conversation between them than there has been between Claire and Frank for years. They're both lonely and isolated, and they're finding relief in each other's company. The fact that Jamie seems to have snapped out of his depression after John makes friends with him is no small feat. In a way, John gave him a reason to go on living. And the problem is that their relationship only works for both of them as friends. They can't be lovers, but Jamie shouldn't try to make John into an enemy either. But there's no manual you can flip to tell you what to do when your best friend falls in love with you.
Yeah, sure.
There is a chance to lay the trauma of Black Jack to rest once and for all, but Jamie isn't going to see that for a while. Anyway, these are my thoughts.
You know, I felt like Lord John Gray kind of brought Jamie back to civilization, back to being human.
Sure.
You know, that's what he was able to give him with pheasant and wine and chess. Like, Jamie was able to be a bit of Jamie again. Jamie is smart and well-rounded and worldly. And I'm thankful that he could have that.
So from Cindy, she says, everyone mentions how poor Frank has to put up with Claire, always thinking of Jamie when she looks at Bree. Not once have I heard Claire mention or throw back or cut down Frank about what Claire has to face every day. She faces the look of BJR at dinner, breakfast, and even during sex. While Frank yells, "Open your eyes, Claire," my gosh, holding her tongue, at least in the series, has been incredible. No poor Frank for me. When I see Frank, I see BJR.
Ooh, Casey wrote and said, that she's so excited to be part of the Outlander community.
Hi-oh.
She's originally from Rhode Island. Yay! She is enjoying season 3 so far and has read through A Breath of Snow and Ashes. She just reread Voyager.
Hi-oh.
Which is one of her favorites, and she's so excited to see how the show progresses. So, you know, she always says that Voyager's plot is a bit out of the frying pan and into the fire, but very enjoyable if you suspend disbelief. I am surprised how long Diana is going with the story. 9 books, but why quit when you're on a good thing? Her Vermonter husband is watching along with her, and he is not a book reader, so just you wait. I love that you know nothing, Jon Snow bits. We are big Game of Thrones fans, too.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Blake, says Casey, you often comment on the cinematography, and I lose myself in the story and don't always notice those. The double bed pan back was striking.
Yes,
I wonder if you have watched Sense8 on Netflix. A lot of good camera work with the characters being there, and some quick comments. I'm glad we got to see Murtaugh again, but I'm thinking he should have died in Ardsmuir. Was it a good chance to say goodbye to a beloved character? Do you think he'll turn up you know where? I wish we had gotten more of Claire's friendship with Joe Abernathy. Well, I have to say on Outlander, but we'll save it for another day. I will jump on a comment thread one of these days. Thank you so much, Casey, for emailing.
I hope you do. I wish we got a chance to see more of Joe's relationship with Claire as well. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling we're going to get more of that next episode, to be honest. And also, Sense8. Sense8 I have not watched, but I am not surprised that you like the cinematography and the camera work. Do you want to know why?
Tell me.
Because Lena and Lily Wachowski direct Sense8.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know who those guys are?
Tell me.
Those ladies are? They are the people behind The Matrix.
Oh.
So their cinematographer and Lena and Lily Wachowski are really good at what they do.
Very cool.
And from Alan, he says, I thought you might want to know a couple of things about the place in the previous episode, which was All Debts Paid. Actually, my daughter found out about them, as a matter of fact. Frank and Claire's house was actually a redressing of Jamie and Claire's Paris apartment. Isn't that cool?
Very.
That is actually really cool. I never would have imagined that. Also, Ardsmuir Prison was a real-life old Scottish castle called Craigsmillar Castle, located near Edinburgh. In fact, Mary Stuart herself, the Queen of Scots. By the way, learn more about her all in our Jacobite podcast. She actually stayed there personally in the year of 1566. Okay. Can you believe that?
Yes, I can. We're going to take a quick break. So once again, today's episode is sponsored by Minute with Mary. And you're like, what is Minute with Mary? It's a minute with me. I have recently been able to discover a new makeup line and help women uncover their confidence, whether it's with their skincare or their makeup or just good old-fashioned girl time. So listen, this is something I'm doing and I'm loving, and it is invigorating me as a work-from-home mom to help kind of, you know,
empower women.
Empower women and bring smiles to women and help women feel just more confident in their skin and have fun playing with makeup. So if you need any skincare or makeup tips, I want you to reach out to me on Facebook, okay? Or you can go to minutewithmary.com to see what I offer. But reach out to me on Facebook, guys. That's the best way so that I can get to know you and get to know your needs, because I really do take the time.
Yes. And you handle everything personally by yourself.
It's literally me. Like this girl that you're listening to, it's me. And I know a thing or two about makeup and skincare that I didn't realize was like a talent that not everybody knew.
Well, coming from the television world the way that you did, you know.
Yeah.
And I love the personal touch that you have with your customers and your clients. And you got a lot of them.
So take a look at minutewithmary.com. Shoot me a message on Facebook. It's not weird. I talk to people on the internet all day long. Let me talk to you.
We're talking to you right now.
I know. MeetItWithMary.com.
All right, my darling, are you ready to get into the voicemails?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Hi, Mary and Blake. Love your podcast.
Thank you.
This is Laura from White Plains, New York, also known as Sweetie on the Outlandish Outlander Bed Blog. Don't usually give perfect scores, but I might have to give episode 303 5 kilt. My GBG is the good is Murtaugh. And I loved the way they did it, where it was kind of a little Easter egg to hear his voice first before you saw him. I don't want to say too much about where I think they might go with that storyline, because I don't want to be spoilery, but
Thank you. You've
read the book, you'll know I was looking for something that I didn't find. I kept wondering if that's why they kept hiding him and having him all covered up. And that is a hint for book readers. They know what I'm talking about. So I don't know if they're going that direction with his storyline. I don't think that I would have a bad if by bad it meant they did something badly. But if by bad it means it wrenched my heart out, I would have to say the whole way they did the thing with Frank. You know, the way you saw how tragic and unhappy his life had been, that, you know, they had an open marriage, but it still caused a lot of pain. I watched the episode twice. The first time I was so tired at midnight that the only time I cried was when Claire said goodbye to Frank. And I cried a few times when I rewatched it this morning, but I still just really, like, you know, tears down the face when she said goodbye to Frank and that he was her first love. I can almost not even say it without crying again. So that's kind of a bad, although because they did it so good. And the great was Jamie smiling. You know, the first time he cracks a smile when, I think it was when he bites into the pheasant, and you just start to see a little life come back into him after that shell he's been the first two episodes. You know, there's, and when, you know, and it's Lord John, like, bringing him out, you know, little by little, bit by bit, you know, talking about the food, playing chess, talking about Claire, and then you start to see that smile coming through again. And I've been a little bit thinking that his performance the last couple episodes was too, like, muted, but then to have it set up the contrast for that.
Oh, it looks like we got cut off there. I'm sorry about that, but I thank you for calling in. I really appreciate what you had to say. Next one.
Hey, Mary and Blake. Teddy Potter.
Teddy!
Hey, Teddy.
4.9 kilts. This episode covered so much territory, but to me, it never seemed rushed. It hit on many of the main... hit on most of what happened in the book in a very economical way. I was really shocked at Frank, what he did and when he did it, as far as Claire's graduation night.
Not a good look.
And him having already seen Carousel and the Searchers. I thought that was really odd and made me think about, like, 70s open marriages, which, I don't know, made me feel a little weird. And also, I cannot say enough how absolutely fabulous Katrina Balfe was in this episode. Mm-hmm. I think so much happened that it's almost overshadowing her individual performance, which was just amazing. I stand with Kate. Adios.
No goodbye. No goodbye. What are we doing? Come on, Teddy. You're killing me.
Seriously. Teddy.
Although, how about this? Hashtag awkward. When she's like, hey, you want to go see a movie? And he's like, yeah, about that.
I'm surprised he didn't lie. I'm surprised he wasn't like, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
Man. Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Lisa from San Diego again. I'm just calling. It was quite an episode. I think it's the best one yet this season. I'm going to give it 5 kilts. I thought I was really going to be all about saying goodbye to Tobias Menzies when I saw it. I am a huge team Tobias, not so much team Frank, but I love Tobias so much. He's such a great actor, and I thought I was just going to be kind of crying the whole episode, but I was emotional. I am going to miss him very much, but I was actually really captivated by Jamie's storyline with David Barry, our Lord John, our new character. I've been waiting so long to see him on screen. I thought he was tremendous, and he and Sam had fantastic chemistry. I'm just so thrilled that they've cast him. I don't care about his coloring. I know he's supposed to be small and blonde or whatever. He's very handsome. He looks very aristocratic. He has the humor down. I think he's just fantastic. So goodbye to Tobias. Mm-hmm. I'm going to miss you, but hello, David Barry, and welcome to Outlander. And thanks, guys, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Yay, bye.
Now, I know you said this on the last episode, my darling, mm-hmm. that he looked like he was in Twilight.
Yeah.
He...
The Volturi.
I mean, seriously, like straight up Volturi.
Yes.
Like, wow.
Say it out loud.
You like my new drop?
Yes. Hello, Edward Cullen.
You like my new drop?
Nice.
Hey, girl.
Nice.
Hey, guys. This is Jess from Los Angeles. I have to say, I absolutely love this episode so much. I feel like this season is so good already, and we're only 3 episodes in, so I just can't wait to see where they're going to take it. For my GBG, I'm going to say that my good was John Gray. This actor had literally one episode to capture the audience, and I think that he was perfect for the role. Not only did he look almost exactly like the younger actor who played him before, but I thought that he did a fantastic job being consistent. He was proper and stoic and emotional, heartfelt and kind. And to capture all of that in the span of like 20 minutes, like half of this episode, is so difficult, but I feel like he pulled it off. So I can't wait to hopefully see more of him. My bad, if I had to choose one negative thing about this episode, it would be the many flashbacks they gave to season 2 with John Gray by the fire, with Jamie and Claire, that whole scene. I feel like they kept going back to it so we would remember it, but it felt unnecessary, especially since they showed it in the previously on Outlander clip before the episode.
So that would be the only thing that I felt was unnecessary. My great, obviously, Tobias Menzies. I'm so sad to see him conclude his role in Outlander, but I thought he did such an amazing job in this episode, mm-hmm. finishing the story between him and Claire. And I don't know, I can't say enough good things about him, so I'll just say that he will be missed absolutely greatly. Bonus great, the music and the cinematography, I have to say something about it because it was beautiful to see Scotland so much. It felt comforting and it was just shot absolutely beautifully. And I just feel like this season has a higher quality throughout, like the writing, the filming, like everything about it just feels like a notch up. Anyways, so I'm loving listening to you guys. I've been listening since season one. I can't get enough. So I can't wait to hear what you guys think. All right, bye.
Thank you so much, Jess. And Jess, you know what?
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
I've been throwing these around all episode today, and everyone that has gotten it has deserved it.
Yeah.
And way to bring it, Jess. Thank you so much.
Hi, Mary and Blake. It's Melanie Longridge from Maple Ridge, Canada, and longtime listener. So great to be able to say that.
Yay!
I just wanted to comment quickly on this last episode, third one, which I loved. I give a 5 out of 5. I love the books. I'm a book reader, and I don't mind that they change things on the show at all. I like some of the changes. The thing that bothered me the most about this last episode was that they changed how Frank's cheating was set up. They changed how it looked like it was that she had agreed to it. It was part of their deal that they had this open marriage where, and even the conversation about going to the movies, and I've already seen those movies. I thought that was sort of lame how they even brought it up that it was agreed upon. I liked the book much better where it was so much more subtle. Like, of course he was cheating and of course she knew, but she didn't kind of let him know that she knew, and she certainly never agreed to it, and she certainly never approved of it, but she kind of also let it slide. I thought that was more subtle, and I thought that, I don't know, it didn't seem like a real Claire thing to do, to just agree to this and say, oh, listen, this is how it's going to be. You're going to be allowed to go and sleep with whoever you want, and I'm going to be okay with that. Like, that's not in Claire's character. She's kind of a badass. So I liked that she kind of knew that it was happening probably, but it wasn't thrown in her face and in the book, and that she just sort of let it go. I also didn't know if they made it clear at all in the show to show watchers that, like, Claire and Frank were still having sex, like, up until he died, like, maybe not as often and as wonderfully loving as other married couples, but they still were. I think we find that out when she talks to Jamie, maybe. But, yeah, I just think it was not clear. Like, it looked like they didn't have sex, so then obviously he had mistresses, which I thought was strange. Or maybe they're changing that in the show, and it's not going to have been that way. But when Claire was a celibate, like, that's not a Claire thing to be either. So I just thought that was a bit of a departure, and totally love the episode. Claire's clothing is just to die for. I want to own it all. I was born in the wrong era. Anyway, love you guys. You're doing a great job. This season is amazing. Love you. Bye.
Thank you, Melanie. We love you, too. Thank you for listening. You know, I think she has a great point here about the lack of sex. I took it as though they weren't having sex. I took it as though it was just a partnership. They were doing what they had to do for Bree. And, you know, they both agreed that they were going to do their own thing. And that was that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, implicit in that, I think, also is Claire was not celibate, that she was doing her own thing and that they were being discreet. Just because you didn't see it doesn't mean that it didn't happen.
That's how you took it.
Yeah, that's how I took it.
Okay.
That's how I took it.
I think she was too busy with med school.
Oh, I mean, obviously, yeah. I think that she was too busy with med school, but perhaps there was some things going on over there. And of course, Frank with Sandy Candy, not a good look. But I kind of like the idea that they didn't have sex.
Okay.
That they didn't have sex because it feels better that way.
Mm-hmm.
At least knowing that their relationship had fallen so greatly because of their agreement.
Yes.
I think it works better that way, at least in my opinion. Okay, are you ready for this week's Tweet of the Week?
Always.
This week's Tweet of the Week goes to @banksdaughter1. They say they captioned a photo of Lord John Grey having Jamie behind him.
On the horse?
They were standing. It's when they were out looking over the Downton Abbey house.
Yes.
The caption was, "Hey, how's this button back coat make my ass look? Do you think you'll notice?"
Oh.
I saw that and I laughed out loud in my office.
I love it.
People were like, "What are you laughing about?
What are you
buddy?
Laughing about?"
And oh my god. Man. So, congratulations to @banksdaughter1 for winning this week's tweet of the week. I promise you, when you have something witty like that, you are going to win. And because that was really good. And for winning this week's Tweet of the Week at Banks Daughter 1, you get a $25 gift card to D. Turner Designs.
What?
Dawn, the owner, is fantastic.
Truly.
She is amazing. She will hook you up with great Outlander tags or any kind of tag that she can imprint. She's amazing and she will take care of you. And I will hook you guys up on Twitter as soon as possible. But for now, my darling, it is time for the Kendra thought of the week.
Kendra!
Hey, ladies. I hope you're all enjoying Martha's Vineyard. I'm going to jump right on in here so I don't run long. Finally, we get Book Frank, and I also finally understand where they're going with him. We needed time to see the progression of his bitterness, because the pair of them have just destroyed each other. Watching them together is like sucking on a lemon, which, coincidentally, will also ward off scurvy, so maybe Claire and Frank should take this out to Ardsmuir Prison. I did not expect to like Lord John Grey, as I don't particularly care for him on the page, but David Barry does very well with him. He brings a subtlety that is a bit lacking in the books. The scene between he and Jamie, where he touches his hand, is just beautifully played by both Barry and Hewin. Despite the fact that I let out an embarrassingly loud cheer when Murta popped up at Ardsmuir, my favorite part of the episode was the way they handled Frank's death. Kate and Tobias particularly give us a masterclass in acting throughout this entire episode. Mm-hmm. But Claire's "You Were My First Love" had me absolutely sobbing. I liked this episode a lot more upon second viewing. During the first viewing, I ended up having this conversation with my husband. Was that in the book? No. Was that in the book? No. Was that in the book? Well, kinda. Do you think we'll see him in flashbacks? Yes. The second viewing allowed me to sit back a bit more and take it all in. Despite that, I'm still not sure how I feel about it. Ardsmuir was not my favorite section of the book. I explained it to my husband like this. Jamie's storyline at this point is plot, plot, plot. Claire and Frank is purely character, and that's why I love that their portion of the book so much. I'm going to give this episode 4 kilts because I think it was great. I'm still not quite sure. At least we didn't get hilarious slow-mo fireplace Jamie, because that was awesome. Next week, whoo boy, here we go. Hellwater. I hope they tread lightly on this, and I trust that they will. Talk to you next week. Sayonara from Japan.
Yay, I love it. And I love the little because, yes,
by
yes,
the way,
Kendra.
By the way, I have an amazing outlandish theory of the week.
Oh.
Amazing. It's going to blow all your doors off.
Wow. You
all
are
your doors.
So proud of yourself.
All your doors.
Kendra, thank you.
Yes, thank you for those amazing comments. And I got to agree with her. I really liked David Barry. Mm-hmm. I really did. It's not entirely clear to me if he is a wholly good character or a wholly bad character. But I get a good feeling from him. I get a good feeling from him the same way I got from Joe Abernathy. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
So I like this character. But are you ready now, my darling, for this Outlandish Theory of the Week, which is gonna blow all your doors off.
Blake, you are so cocky.
I'm totally cocky because I am awesome at this.
My gosh.
And after the beating I took last week, I tried to come up with the most insane batshit theory that I could think of.
There you go.
And I think it's gonna come true. Are you ready?
And if it doesn't, I will laugh. Yes.
But before I get into it, I want to let you know that this Outlandish Theory of the Week is brought to you by Celtic Eternity. Please visit CelticEternity.com and get 10% off of Celtic and Scottish rings
Ooh.
With the coupon code OUTLANDER10. cast, all one word. You know, this outlandish theory is so freaking good. It's so good that it deserves another sound. Okay, so I tried to think of the most soap opera-y thing that I could ever imagine.
Okay, we need like background soap opera music. Like,
I don't have soap opera music queued up here, sorry. And, you know, because, listen, Outlander has a penchant for like doing things that are like, whoa. Like the whole Bonnie Prince with the French girl last season. Like, all right, come on.
When are you just going to accept it?
And then again, also, Frank not being the true descendant of Black Jack Randall. It was like this switcheroo with Alex Randall.
I loved it.
It was great, but it's just like soap opera-y like to me. So, okay, here it is.
Bring it.
Jamie is going to Hellwater. And
why would they name it that?
I have no idea. But Lord John Grey, I'm not sure if he meant it was Murtaugh who was going to be an indentured servant. Historically, that would be true, that he's going to be an indentured servant in the colonies. But it also felt like to me that Jamie is going to be somewhat of an indentured servant over at Hellwater. And he's going to run in to the hussy over at Hellwater. The hussy we talked
about. Which hussy?
The hussy we talked about in the trailer. Remember the girl that was looking him up and down? He had his shirt off. I guarantee you that this is where this girl is. And I guarantee you that he's going to be used as like
a rent-a-dildo?
A servant. Yeah, he's going to be a rent-a-dildo. Or he's going to be a sex toy, as the rent-a-dildo would be. Or at the very least, there's going to be a questionable scene between these two of rape. Because Outlander has used this trope of rape to move the story along on its path for plot reasons. And I feel like not only is there going to be some kind of questionable scene between the two, but it's going to be the girl, the hussy, who is the aggressor. And she's going to be taking advantage of Jamie. But that's not my outlandish theory of the week. Oh, no, no, okay. No. My real outlandish theory of the week, that's just the buildup. The real outlandish theory of the week is that at the most soap opera-y thing I could ever think of is that not only will he be a sex toy and you know, who knows what happens, but this girl, the hussy,
yeah,
will be pregnant because she used him and abused Jamie.
Used and abused.
Whoa. And it will be Jamie's baby. Just like how Claire has went away with a baby. He didn't have one, and now he will have one with a woman that he didn't want to be with, just like Claire was with a man she didn't want to be with.
So parallel.
So that is my outlandish theory of the week. This
is this what you lie waking up at night, drawing up these different soap opera ideas?
I was miffed last week. I was miffed.
Before you know it, you're going to start throwing zombies into the equation.
Hey, you never know. You never know.
I know.
I may throw a zombie in there every once in a while.
I know.
Just because I'm cool like that.
I think that'd be a good idea.
Am I getting an interesting?
Throw in a zombie and I'll give it an interesting. Do it.
It's going to be a zombie baby.
Ooh, nice.
How's that work for you?
I'm just laughing and so are many people listening.
Mock me.
Please hang up and try again.
Throw in a you-know-nothing. Just for that.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
There you go.
Just for that.
Nice.
Just for that. My love, final thoughts on this episode. I know you have talked a lot about it. Thank you for talking with me about it. What do you have for your final thoughts?
I love it. Keep coming on. Season 3, do not stop airing. I enjoy it. I love discussing it. Mm-hmm. Make sure that it keeps... Maybe since we like it so much, they'll make it 20 episodes. They'll change their mind.
For me, I got to pull one out for my homie, Tobias. I got a feeling we're going to see him again.
Not a pants off.
No. Okay. But we're going to see him again. And it's not going to be this season, I don't think. And I don't think it's going to be next season. But I think...
When will I see you?
As a matter of fact, here is another outlandish theory of the week.
Mock me.
Oh, no.
Please hang up and
you're
try again.
You're done. The Bonnie Prince said that's enough.
Here's another outlandish theory of the week for you.
Okay.
I told you last week that Bree was going to end up going back. There's no guarantee that she ends up going back to the same time Claire went back to.
Could she go back to the dinosaurs?
So,
will
if that's
be Jurassic
the case,
Park?
Hold on. Where is my sound? Oh, no.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Will she ride a Brachiosaurus?
Here's another Lynch theory. I guarantee you, Bree runs into Black Jack Randall. Because she may not come back to the exact point that Claire does. That would be phenomenal.
Daddy?
Right? Like, that would be interesting. Give me an interesting for that.
Interesting.
That's an interesting. Okay, great.
Let's just start throwing all other characters in there. Who else could she bump into?
Murtaugh. Column. Dougal.
Yep.
Why not?
Let's just throw them all in there. Throw them all in there.
One of it. You throw enough of this shit against the wall, some of it's going to stick.
There you go.
That is the beauty of my outlandish theories of the week.
I love it.
So for my final thought, pour one out for my homie, Tobias. I do think that this show is losing a... What?
I'm just laughing at you because you do know nothing, Jon Snow.
I know I know nothing.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Okay.
I really do feel like the show is losing a major asset. I feel like the show is losing...
He did not have a hairy enough chest nor red hair to be Jamie, so alas.
No, but just in terms of the actor itself.
No, I know.
The guy brings it. And I love Frank. I love... Black Jack Randall. You keep laughing at me. What are you doing to me?
I just want to picture Tobias Menzies wearing a red wig trying to pretend to be Bree and to sneak on set. Like, guys, I'm not done. I swear I could talk falsetto. Like, just trying. Just wants to be on set. He'll be anybody.
I really feel like he brought it as an actor. He gave this show a level of gravitas that the show deserved. I loved Frank. I loved me some Black Jack Randall. But I will admit it is time for them to go. It is no longer their story.
The time has come.
It is time for them for Outlander to move on. I'm just going to miss them.
I'm going
to miss him very much.
But it's better to feel this way than to be like, God,
he's still go away. And that's one thing I will say too about Frank dying so quickly. At least, you know, you can look back and remember fondly at Tobias and not be like, oh, he stayed a minute too late. Like, they forced it on us.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. So normally this is when we would play our closeout music, but I'm not going to have any right now because we're gonna pour one out for my homie, Tobias. So please go to OutlanderCast.com to check out the podcast, any episode that we have there. Also, the blog that is head up by our amazing editors, Janet and Ashley. And check out all the great articles that we have there, including the minute-by-minute recaps. And also, if you could please do tell a friend that we exist. Just tell them that we exist, that the podcast exists, and that would be fantastic. So here is the surprise that I promised all of you. We're going to close it out with Frank. Frank.